We just got through our little Skype hiccup, and I'm glad we're on Skype. This is great. And I'm glad you're back, Jake. I was worried a little bit there for a while. I thought the deep state was going to take you out after the last show. It's good to know.
Oh, yeah. Things got pretty fuzzy there for a little while.
Did they? Did you want to just talk about it at all? Or?
Well, sure. I had gotten really deep into this Las Vegas investigation. I really set aside everything else that I was working on and focused almost exclusively on Las Vegas for close to 6 months. And a lot of my focus was on the background of Stephen Paddock and his ties to U.S. government agencies and work that he may have been doing for them as an asset. Doing possibly some drug running, gun running, and how the ATF may have been using him to do some helping to set people up that were involved in illegal arms sales and petty, not huge things, but you know they take down a lot of small fish there in Arizona and elsewhere. And so as I got deeper into working, there were things that I was covering that no media outlet was touching. And it was through searching a lot of his records, like his motor vehicle registrations and people that he had transferred vehicles to. And then that traced all the way back to some people in Nevada that he had transferred some of his vehicles to and actually co-owned for a while. And these were a couple of people that were sent to prison for illegal ketamine sales. They were defrauding the U.S. government, Medicaid, while at the same time providing people with a lot of ketamine, which is a drug that can be used for different things, including it's kind of a little bit like LSD. It can be used as a hallucinogenic. But so as I got deeper into that investigation, and of course, a lot of this I'm publishing as I'm going along, and then I started having troubles. It started out with harassment, just some tires being slashed, and I had posted online so people could see it, so they would actually know I'm not making this up. I put online pictures of some of the vandalism and the pictures of the police walking around my property doing an investigation and the police reports and everything. And the next thing that happened was when some of the predictions that I had made based on the research I had done, I made certain predictions that to me would have confirmed that Stephen Paddock was in fact linked to the FBI or to the ATF if certain things came to pass. And when those things started happening as a result of the media there in Nevada started suing MGM to get them to release, or I'm sorry, started suing the LVMPD, the Las Vegas Metro Police Department, to get them to release certain things, certain findings. Well, as those findings started to come out, they were verifying right down to the exact day some of the material that I had put out. I had predicted that we would eventually find out that Stephen Paddock was in a certain city on a certain day and that he was involved in doing weapons transfers on that day. And so when the name of that individual actually came out as a matter of public record, and then they went in and arrested this guy and, you know, to shut him up real quick, I thought, geez, dang it, I was right about some of this. You know, as an investigator, of course, you have your gut instinct and then you have the research. But when you're dealing with some of these clandestine agencies and the lengths to which they are willing to go to shut people up, I knew, in fact, I put out a video that night saying, guys, I think that I'm getting ready to be set up by the FBI. I think that they're going to come try and get what I have, because I had been hinting at things that I had that I wasn't releasing. And the very next day, that's when I got this bizarre phone call from a German national, a woman in Utah, who is not an American citizen, but she was trying to get me to engage in basically trying to help defraud the U.S. government and to work around the Department of Homeland Security. She wanted me to transport $42,000.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
She wanted me to take money to her there, and that if I did this, I was going to have a massive, massive financial windfall. And so, of course, I had hit the record button on my system here to record the phone call for my own protection. And when the phone call was over, I started looking up this woman, her history, and found that she had been investigated for years by the Utah Department of the Commerce Department. Basically, they handle things like fraud and stuff like that. And so I called them. I called the state and said, there's this woman, Ingeborg Delvecchio was her name, Ingeborg Delvecchio. Mm-hmm. And I said, I've looked at the court records online, and I see that you've taken her to court a few times, and you've busted some of her lackeys, some of the people that have worked with her, and you put them away in prison for these massive fraud schemes. I mean, this woman has bilked people out of over $500 million.
That's
this
incredible.
Is not like a small-time criminal. This is a big-time con man with a massive operation where money was being funneled to Nigeria, just like the stereotypical Nigerian email scam. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what she's doing. She's funneling money to Nigeria. So I asked the Department of Commerce, I said, if you keep going after her and taking her to court, then why is she still a free woman after all this time? Why don't you have this woman in prison yet? And they said, well, we've actually got two open investigations. We're doing the best we can, but we keep running into roadblocks. And they said, so here's what we're going to do. I had told them that I had evidence that could help in putting her away, which was my recording, because it's very clear in the recording. She's just coming right out asking me to commit crimes. And so I'm very careful in this phone call to each time she brings it up to say, absolutely, I will not participate in any kind of criminal enterprise whatsoever. So to protect myself. Mm-hmm. So I told him, listen, I've got this and I'll help you put her away. And they said, great, that's great material. That may help us, because so far everything we've tried hasn't worked. And so they said, we'll call you in a couple of days. We'll have an investigator from the state call me. And I said, okay. Less than an hour later, I got a phone call, but it wasn't from the Department of Commerce. It was from the FBI. And a smooth-talking FBI agent, who is the head of, well, I won't say which division, because I don't want to identify.
Right.
But he was saying, so I hear you have some information about Ingeborg Delvecchio. And I told him, I said, well, maybe. What information do you think I have? And they said, well, we've heard that you have a tape on her. Of a conversation, and that would be very nice. We want to have that. And I said, well, I'm a little bit concerned here, because as best I can tell, she works for you.
No kidding.
I really don't feel comfortable turning anything over to you until I've spoken with an attorney. And they said, well, we're going to send somebody over to your house. We'll
Great.
Send a couple of agents over to get the record.
Just what you wanted, right?
Yeah. A
couple of agents coming to your house. I know that would be pleasant.
Yeah, so I told them, Mark, I said, I appreciate it, but I said, I know where the local FBI office is. I will, after I speak with my attorney, I'll take this over if the attorney says that he doesn't see any problem with it. And so I said, how is it that you're involved? Because how is this a federal matter? And they told me where their connection was to it, and said that the reason, I said, why hasn't she gone to prison after all this time? And they said, well, the judge in the case, just for whatever reason, the judge keeps letting her go every time the state tries to prosecute her. They put away her associates, but not her. And I could tell they were screwing around with me. So as I was getting off the phone, they said, "Oh yeah, and remember, we'll have our agents there tomorrow at your house."
Great. And
did they come? No, they didn't, because what I did was I first called my personal attorney, and she said, "Jake, this is not something that I want to handle here. You need a federal criminal attorney for this."
Oh my God.
And she gave me some names, referrals. So I called around, spoke with a few of them, and of the three that I spoke to, the one who I decided to use, has a whole lot of experience dealing with federal, criminal charges and dealing with the FBI. And he said, "Look, there's absolutely nothing in this for you. Even if you have the desire to help out going after this criminal, they could very well be setting you up here. So send them a message, get a message to them telling them that from now on, any communication needs to be done through me or through the attorney, and that they don't need to send any agents because unless they have a subpoena, I'm not going to turn anything over to them." And, so that's what I did. I got back in touch with a special agent and told him, "Listen, appreciate your interest, but there's really no bother. I'm not going to answer the door if any agents show up."
Sure.
"And not without a subpoena." And so the fact that this bizarre thing happened just the very next day after I made a video saying, I think the FBI is going to try and set me up to shut me up. And then they came after this. What my attorney said, which is already in my head as the possible motive for this, was because all of my files on Stephen Paddock and the whole Las Vegas case are all the recording that I made is on the computer. And for them to be able to get that original recording of me recording this German national trying to set me up, they need to have what they would do is actually confiscate my computer itself, which would give them access to everything that I've got.
Great.
So that was pretty much what I had expected. So things got hairy. It was pretty troubling there for a little while, because I've had run-ins with the FBI in the past, and I know how they operate, and they will take innocent people and throw them behind bars to get what they want. They don't care about collateral damage. And so I backed off largely from the – clearly that's what they were after, was they didn't want me to out that information. And that was right around – that was also just a week or so after that is when I had another guy named Evan McMullen from Utah, from the same area that this – German national was from the same place. It was the FBI in Salt Lake City that had contacted me. And next thing I know, there's this guy named Evan McMullen, no relation to the presidential candidate, the CIA agent who ran for president against Trump there in Utah back in 2016. Anyway, this guy shows up on my lawn saying that he's a satanic ritual abuse survivor. And he wants to tell me the story, but I had told him he called me in advance and said, "I'm coming. I'm flying out to your house and people are trying to kill me." And I said, "Dude, if somebody is trying to kill you, the last place I want you to go is to my house where my children are. Right. Don't come to my house."
Right.
And sure enough, next day he showed up. And
wow.
So I had to chase him off the property with a bat.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. And then at the same time, there was a guy who was involved somewhat, one of these, I don't want to say pseudo investigators on YouTube, that was spreading a bunch of false information about the Vegas thing, completely making up.
Oh yeah.
Untrue stories. And anyway, him and one of his toadies, they really got into harassing me, and it was constant. I was getting death threats.
So they were attacking you.
It was hardcore. I mean, I had about a week where it was all day, every day.
Oh man, these people gotta get a life. What's wrong with these people?
So
didn't like the content of your videos?
It wasn't. Well, it's not that they didn't like the content. It's that what I was doing was exposing some of these FBI plants. They were purposely putting out disinformation. For example, this one guy had put out information claiming to have all this secret intel about how what happened in Las Vegas was the FBI trying to thwart an attack on the Saudi crown prince who was supposedly at one of the hotels there. And the FBI did all kinds of stuff. And this guy was claiming that he was part of a crack team that was operating a drone, a Predator drone, over Las Vegas and was going to use the drone to assassinate these people that carried out the Vegas attack. So I got looking at the claims he was making, and I investigated it. And what I dug up were the actual FAA records showing that the flight records. There was a plane circling overhead during this time, but it wasn't a Predator drone. Right. What it was an FBI surveillance plane.
Hmm.
It was a Cessna, and I did a whole report about it showing all the details. And what this plane was doing was collecting all of the phone data from the people that were staying at the Mandalay Bay on the night of the shooting, collecting all just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cell phone records. And so I put out a report on that and basically exposing that the FBI was much more involved than what they were telling us and that it was dirty what they were doing. And so basically there was a big disinformation campaign to try and steer people off track from what was really going on there.
Well,
and they were trying to shut me up.
Let me send you something in the Skype here. Something else for you to investigate if you get time. Can you see that?
Let's see here. Emery
Smith.
Yes.
Is this nonsense? I want you to find that out. If you ever get any free time, sounds like you're pretty damn busy. But underground bases, secret space program. If you want to go down the rabbit hole a little farther, do something a little different. I don't know. You could try that. I'd be glad, very interested to either way it goes is fine with me. If you find it to be total nonsense, you probably won't have time, but
well, I'll look at it. It looks intriguing.
Oh, it's not boring. Watch that video. It's not boring at all. But so I just wanted you to check into that. But tonight I want to talk a little bit about these cruise missiles. We've learned about these cruise missiles that were shot at targets in Syria. And the more I think about the whole thing, what I'm wondering is, can you really destroy chemical weapons with bombs and missiles? I would think that chemical weapons would have to be exploded underground or something in a very controlled way, or you'd be asking for an environmental disaster. Can you comment on that, Jake?
Oh, yeah. If there actually had been chemical weapons that were already weaponized, hitting it with a cruise missile would just disperse it into the air and kill people in the, you know, the
hundreds of thousands.
So the claim can be made that, well, maybe what they were doing is not attacking where completed weapons were, but the components or the places where they could manufacture these. Mm-hmm. But it's just not true. It was all for show. Really what it was there was going to be a concerted, massive campaign to degrade primarily Iran's troops and their military and they're in Syria. All of this stuff in Syria really has less to do about Syria and more to do with Iran. This is part of a long-term strategy against Iran. And so the main concern, for example, that Israel has with there in Syria, the reason they keep sneaking in and conducting these little strikes, because you may know that before Donald Trump launched his strikes, Israel had gone in just a handful of days before and carried out their own airstrikes. And then we had Trump's. And then after the Trump airstrikes, Israel went in and carried out some more airstrikes. So they keep going in here, but they're specifically targeting the Iranian the Revolutionary Guards, the troops from Iran that are there helping to keep the Syrian government propped up.
You know what's so disturbing about this to me, Jake? Sorry to interrupt you, but...
No, go ahead.
We are clearly the bad guys in all this. And it used to be, like, when I was younger, I wasn't sure if we were the bad guys or not. But now it's just so blatant that we're doing things that are just horrible. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, there really is no justification for what we're doing there. And I've spent more than probably any other topic over the last, I guess, since 2013. The geopolitics of the Middle East has been the main thing that I have focused on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have followed this mess in Syria since 2011, and I started doing my own reporting in 2013. And long before the media was using the name ISIS, I was talking about these rebel factions and what was going on and how the U.S. State Department had these weapons rat lines running from Benghazi, Libya, to Turkey, and that President Erdogan of Turkey was allowing the CIA to use Turkey to route these weapons back down into the hands of the jihadists that were down in Syria and Iraq. That's where the whole Benghazi scandal was that people hear about. It was about the CIA using a bunch of just radical jihadists there in Libya, arming them, using them to overthrow Gaddafi and his government. And then when that job was done, a lot of these militias that they were using in Libya, they did contract work for the CIA. They went up into Iraq and into Syria. But to get the weapons, the armaments to them that they had used against Gaddafi, what the State Department was doing was running the weapons through Benghazi, up through Turkey, and down back to these same terrorists. And as these militia groups, these radical militias from Libya, went up there and started merging with the existing al-Qaeda affiliates that the CIA was working with, they became even more radicalized, and we had the birth of ISIS. And so ISIS, very literally, in the most literal sense, ISIS was created by the United States government and by the CIA, with full knowledge of Hillary Clinton, who at the time was the Secretary of State. It was known to our CIA. And we have been funding these people. We've been providing weapons to them, and we've been providing logistical support. And so much so that one of the things that Russia did early on was up in the area of Aleppo, Syria. Aleppo is it's in northern Syria, close to the Turkish border. Well, Aleppo is this big city that ISIS had taken control of, and they got lodged in there in Aleppo, and they couldn't get them out, and so. One of the reasons was that anytime the Syrian army would come up and fight, somehow ISIS always knew what was going on. They had this great logistical ability to anticipate what the Syrian army was going to do. Well, it turned out that what was happening was right outside of Aleppo, there was an underground bunker, a headquarters, where there were intelligence operatives from the CIA, the Israeli Mossad, and from Qatar, as well as a couple other little places. But Russia decided to just bomb this bunker, and it killed dozens. And this was mainstream news. It wasn't well publicized, but mainstream news outlets covered this story. And so Russia ended up killing a lot of these CIA and Mossad agents, because what they were doing is they were the ones, the CIA was feeding the information, the military activities of the Syrian Arab Army to the ISIS fighters in Aleppo to ensure that ISIS could retain its hold on Aleppo. And so Russia said enough of that, and they bombed them and killed dozens of them. And eventually, through Russia's help to Syria, they were able to get the get ISIS out of Aleppo. And just recently, one of the next biggest areas they had people in, the U.S.-backed rebels, was down there in eastern Ghouta, in primarily in the city of Douma, and that's what all of this stuff that Donald Trump was talking about is over. The Syrian Arab Army had finally managed to basically bring the existing rebels that were there, that had been there since about 2012, 2013, finally got them whittled down to where they were going to lose. The name of the group is Jaish al-Islam, which means the Army of Islam, that had taken control. But these people were brutal. I've put videos on my my YouTube channel, showing these people, the rebels that the U.S. was funding, taking the local civilians, took 700 of them, and they took 100 cages, these great big cages. They put 7 civilians in each cage, and then they moved the cages around the city in strategic locations where the Syrian army was trying to conduct airstrikes. And they put the civilians there so that they had human shields.
Jeez.
Well, eventually, with Russia's help, Iran's help, the Syrian army got them to the point that they said, look, if you will guarantee us safe passage, we'll leave. And that is the point at which we had this alleged chemical weapons attack, which kind of renewed everything. They had basically surrendered. They had already begun to release people. And it was at the loss of this strategic location, that's when the United States and France and the UK came in and started these cruise missile strikes, which kind of emboldened Jaish al-Islam. They tried to resist a little longer. Syria routed them and got them out of there. But still, I don't see how any red-blooded American can cheer for the United States in this.
Yeah, I can't either.
It's grossly immoral. And yeah. I'm not anti-American. The reason that I feel so strongly about what's happening is because I am so pro-American. I grew up loving my country, and I still do. I feel fiercely loyal to the United States. But I know that what degrades the United States is bad behaviors. When we have crooked or corrupt people come into power in our government, and these people do bad things in the name of the American people, it's not my country or my countrymen or our military that I'm against. It's these corrupt bureaucrats that are beholden to multinational corporations and the international banking cartel, to the oil corporations. Those are the ones that I feel strongly against. And so I criticize and I do reports to try and expose their corruption, not because I dislike my country, but because I love my country. And right is right and wrong is wrong. And if my government is doing something that is wrong, I don't care if it's the American government. I don't care if it's someone I voted for or didn't vote for in office. If it's wrong and it's killing innocent people, then as a Christian, I'm going to speak out against it.
Sure. Absolutely. I could see that. So what are your thoughts on Trump?
Well, nobody likes my thoughts on Trump.
Well, I mean, you know, I've been really disappointed lately because to me, there's really no excuse for what he's done at all. I mean, to me, it makes me wonder, is he really a globalist? Is he Hillary Light? I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, I've always said that Trump is a globalist. He says he's not, but it's always been my position that he's a globalist. And it's not that I'm offering just some kind of unqualified personal opinion on it. What I do is I look at what Donald Trump has said over the years, his actual stated positions. If it comes out of his own mouth, then I get to, you know, criticize him if he's saying something that's wrong. And Donald Trump, even during the 2015-2016 campaign period, he was repeatedly talking in media interviews about how foolish it was that we didn't take the oil from Iraq. and how it was so foolish that Barack Obama is not trying to take the oil from Syria. Hmm. And when you think about it, does that oil in Iraq or Syria or Iran, do the American people have a right, some kind of inherent right to the natural resources from another country?
No,
if we have a right to stake claim to other people's things, then naturally they have a right to say, you know what? You've got a lot of uranium there in the ground in the United States. You've got a lot of shale. And because we have more military power, we're going to come take it from you. And in the process, if we kill your women and children, so be it. You know, if it's not okay morally, if we're going to say, no, we wouldn't be okay with China coming over here and stealing resources from us, then we cannot justifiably say that it's okay to do that to other people. And so all during the campaign, as Donald Trump kept saying these things, we should take the oil, we should take the oil, when there's no justification, not moral, not legal, that to me is that's exactly the agenda of the New World Order globalists. That's what they do. That's what they do. No, for decades and decades, that's what they do. These Rothschild oil corporations, and they go after oil. That's what the whole mess is right now in the Middle East. It's all about Rothschild corporations and Rothschild subsidiaries, which are often a lot of these Rockefeller oil companies, but they're after the oil. They're doing the same thing in Somalia. They're doing it in Sudan. They're going after it. But they also go after natural resources like diamonds. The Rothschild syndicate goes after, you know, diamonds in Africa. There's a massive amount of very lucrative minerals in North Korea. And so we got to find some reason to bomb North Korea, to go in there. So Donald Trump, when he is saying these things as a candidate and now as president, he's actually doing them. To me, it's not inconsistent. A lot of Trump supporters say, oh, I voted for him because he was like this, but now he's like this. Well, I disagree. I always saw that in Donald Trump because I actually listened to his words and thought through the ramifications in actual policy for Donald Trump to gain control of the oil of Iraq or Syria. What would that entail? Well, that... Yeah, it would entail some kind of unjust military action.
Tremendous military.
So to me, Trump has always been a globalist. And in his own words, he said that he's a nationalist and a globalist. That was in mainstream news that he says that. So you can't be a nationalist and a globalist. That's like saying I'm a Democrat and a Republican. You're one or the other. Maybe you have a mix of things, but you can't be polar opposite because they're two different philosophies.
So with Hillary, we probably would have had nuclear war by now against Russia. But still, these two could still be working for the same team, but in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, one of them is totally insane, which would be Hillary. And then I guess Donald Trump he's just in bed with the globalists. That's the most likely answer to his behavior. You know, I mean, I could rationalize things and come up with all these different things, but, you know, when you see him, is this the second time he's shot missiles now?
Yeah, it's the second time he's gone, he's fired cruise missiles in Syria. The first time was April of 2017. And now April 2018. But he's also, people don't realize this, Donald Trump is also has radically ramped up U.S. involvement in Yemen. I think very few Americans realize the level at which the United States is at war in Yemen, which is ridiculous.
Now, isn't Saudi Arabia attacking Yemen right now?
Yeah, that's been going on for a while.
Are we attacking Yemen?
Yeah.
With Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, major. We are pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into arming Saudi Arabia and helping Saudi Arabia with, like, our Air Force goes out there and we are doing refueling missions for Saudi Arabia. We're providing intelligence. We're providing logistical support. And we even have some troops on the ground. In fact, the very first month that Donald Trump was in office, there was a debacle where some of the special forces on the ground in Yemen, one of them got killed. And they quickly covered that story up. But Donald Trump has radically increased the involvement of the United States in Yemen. And the thing is, it goes back to the geopolitical goal of isolating Iran. Because in Yemen, you've got basically you can take the Muslim world and divide it into three factions. You've got the largest, which are the Sunnis. Mm-hmm. The Sunnis make up about 90% of Islam. The Sunnis are in nations like Saudi Arabia. They've got a lot in Iraq, but mostly, if they're radicals out killing people, no, I'm not trying to be rude to Sunnis, but the Wahhabis are usually there in the Sunni nations. Then you've got the minority group, which are the Shiites. That's the next largest group. They make up maybe 15% in the whole world's population. Mm-hmm. There's a lot in Syria. There's a lot in Iraq. But the most of them are in Iran. I'd say probably 80% of the world's Shiites are in Iran. Mm-hmm. But down in Yemen, there's also a very large group of Shiites. So Yemen is, if you think of the Saudi Arabia as being in the shape of a boot, mm-hmm. Yemen forms the heel of that boot, mm-hmm. geographically. Well, Saudi Arabia, in order to keep Iran from having influence down there in Yemen, what Saudi Arabia does to these little states around it, like Bahrain and elsewhere, is they go in and they install Sunni puppets. And so in Yemen, they had installed a Sunni leader, a Sunni king. Mm-hmm. The Yemeni people, a group of them called the Houthis, they got tired of Saudi Arabia manipulating their country through their puppet, this Sunni puppet. So they chased him out of the country and took control of the Yemeni government. When that happened, that really ticked off Saudi Arabia. So they say, well, we've got to gain control of Yemen again. So they decided to go to war against the Houthis down in Yemen. But because the Houthis are essentially Shiites, what's happening is Iran is providing missiles and weapons and financial support to the Yemeni Houthis while Saudi Arabia is trying to knock them out and reinstall a Sunni leader. So the United States is helping Saudi Arabia in that war.
Terrible.
But Saudi Arabia is, if I could pick one nation on the entire planet that is the most ruthless, barbaric government.
Evil.
After Israel, I would say it's Saudi Arabia. And I know that's going to tick a lot of people off, but it's the truth, and I'm not backing down from it.
Wow.
But Saudi Arabia's led, they've got a king named King Salman. King Salman is pretty old. He's got dementia. And so his son, who's only in his early 30s, whose name is Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Crown Prince Salman is the nation's defense minister. He is also, this past year, he got himself put in as the crown prince. Previously, he wasn't the next in line for the throne. But he pretty much runs the country. He's the de facto leader. And so he launched this war against Yemen. Trump is all in it. He is completely supportive. And one of his first acts as president was Trump went over to, he took a delegation, Jared Kushner and others, and they went over to Saudi Arabia there into Riyadh and awarded Saudi Arabia the greatest weapons deal in global history, world history.
Oh, yeah.
Multi-billion dollar weapons deal.
Hundreds of billions, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible. And so we've got we've got this relationship between the United States and Saudi Arabia. The Saudi government is it's just a mafia family. Mm-hmm. There's nothing royal about the royal family. They just happen to be the strong man, the most powerful among these different tribal groups. And they came to power and they worked out a deal with the United States in which we get preferred oil prices, and they insist on selling oil in U.S. dollars. And that creates something called the petrodollar. When the entire world has to buy oil, everyone in the world needs oil. And so if you have to have, you can only buy oil with U.S. dollars, that means there is going to be a perpetual, constant, never-ending demand for the U.S. dollar. And that keeps our dollar very, very strong. So that's the deal. The Saudis say, we will continue to insist that the world has to buy our stuff in U.S. dollars, but you have to keep us in power. Basically, the U.S. military has to agree to be the bodyguard of the House of Saud there in Saudi Arabia. And so back in the early 90s, when Saddam Hussein went from Baghdad down there, sent his troops down to Kuwait, which is kind of northeast of Saudi Arabia, when he went down there and took control of some of the Kuwaiti oil fields, Saudi Arabia was afraid that he was going to come all the way down and knock off the government in Saudi Arabia. And that is the reason why we had the Gulf War. That's what George H.W. Bush said, all right, yes, you know, we got to go protect our co-puppets that are there in Saudi Arabia. And they came over and they made sure that Saddam Hussein was repelled and couldn't come down to Saudi Arabia. I don't think he had any intention of going down there, but that was the pretext. To degrade him. And the Saudis originally wanted the USA to just do it as a complete proxy war and knock off Saddam Hussein back in 91, 92, but that didn't happen.
Let me just drastically change the topic just for a second. Have you ever researched the founding fathers? For example, Benjamin Franklin used to do like these satanic rituals and did human sacrifice, and they recently found a whole bunch of dead bodies on his land in England. And he was in this club called the Hellfire Club. And so the point of the reason I kind of brought it up in this whole discussion is from the get go, the United States has been like this. We just didn't know it.
Yeah. We've had some bad characters. In college, my major was history with a concentration in the American Revolutionary period. Mm-hmm. So I studied a lot of this stuff, and American history isn't quite what they teach us in school. Actually, I think now they don't teach American history hardly at all.
Probably
in
not.
School. But Benjamin Franklin was never one of my favorites. In fact, I didn't like him at all. I know that he did play a role in some key moments, but he was the deputy postmaster general for North America, and he lived primarily in London. And he was very much the American founding fathers that I have a lot of love for are men like Samuel Adams, Patrick Henry. These were the guys who worked largely behind the scenes and helped to stoke through their words and through their persuasive arguments, tried to help the American people to see it's worth it to take a stand for what's right. But at the same time, you've got the Rothschilds over there in Great Britain and elsewhere in Europe with their banking system trying to impose banking control over the colonies, and so there was constant influence as we were forming the nation. In fact, the War of 1812 was more than anything else, it was a war over banking, and the reason that Andrew Jackson is notable as a president was his main accomplishment was fighting against the establishment of a central bank. But, you know, by 1913, they got what they wanted. They got the Federal Reserve in place. They passed the, well, they claimed to have passed the 16th Amendment, the income tax. It actually was never ratified properly. So the whole, like, to be absolutely honest, the income tax, the federal income tax, is completely voluntary. But try paying your taxes. Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah, and that was established. That was established in the Supreme Court, because taxation has to be apportioned, and the income tax is it is a disproportioned tax on the people. And so when people have sued and the matter in the past has gone to the U.S. Supreme Court, the Supreme Court ruled, they said no new taxation authority was granted by the passage of the 16th Amendment, which means that they still don't have the authority to tax. And America, there's a movie documentary by, I can't remember his name right now, America, Freedom to Fascism, for people that want to learn about the income tax amendment. That's a great one.
You know, also Thomas Jefferson had like 200 slaves, I think. Some people have said the Statue of Liberty, the flame, is really the Illuminati saying to us, hey, we're in control here. Have you ever heard that?
I don't know about the flames specifically, but it's no secret that the Statue of Liberty was commissioned and paid for by Freemasons. That's by the French Freemasons. They even have a plaque. They had an installation ceremony that's a matter of historical record, and everyone was decked out in their Masonic garb. And there's actually on the Statue of Liberty itself, there's a plaque that says that it was commissioned and paid for by the Freemasons. Lots of Freemasonic symbolism.
And if you look at the Washington Monument, you got this giant obelisk like Egypt, this huge phallic symbol in Washington, yeah. D.C. I think from the beginning when they designed this whole thing, and what does it say on the dollar? Novus Ordo Seclorum or something like that, yeah. Which is the New World Order. What? It's crazy.
Originally, I can't remember their names. The original motto and the original design for the symbol of the United States, I'm trying to remember. I can't remember their names. A couple of basically Vikings, Helga or Helen, I don't remember. The original symbol, instead of like the pyramid and the eye and the mm-hmm. and the eagle and the holding the all the stuff. Yeah, it was on one side of the coin. It was the house of the Israelites being led out of Egypt with a pillar of fire and a cloud. And then you turn it over and it's got these two Viking looking people. But it was based on the idea, the founding fathers, a lot of them really liked the legal system that was enjoyed by a lot of the Scandinavians. That was based on, well, it was very, very limited government. But in time, they decided that they didn't like that. And that's when they started changing all the symbols around and making them more Illuminati-type symbols.
I know I'm bouncing all over the place here, but that's kind of the way my mind works sometimes. I don't know if you know this or not. I mean, I interview a lot of different people from different areas of expertise. You know, right now we have, according to one of my guests anyway, 100,000 immigrants coming into our nation every month. Were you aware of that?
I knew it was quite a few. I don't know the number, but yes, it's a massive, massive influx.
It's such a big number. There's no way we could ever, our economy could not grow jobs, 100,000 new jobs a month. It's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the goal here with this is to flood the country, to remove the cultural identity of the country. Mm-hmm. I'm all, just about all of us have some immigrant ancestry in us.
Sure.
You know, setting aside the, if we consider the original people that came over as settlers, and but still, all of us have got immigrant blood in us. Immigration is perfectly fine. I have no problem with it. But traditionally, even including when we were kids, Mark, the idea of immigration was people liked the idea of becoming Americans. They came here because they liked our system. They liked the freedom. They liked the opportunities to reach and stretch and take risk and be rewarded for their labors. But the idea was we were a melting pot where all of these different cultures came together, melded together, and it was the melding of those different cultures that created what America is. It's the blending of it together. But what's happening is that as these, the a lot of these recent waves of immigration is, they are not assimilating. There is no goal to assimilate.
Right.
It is to come and almost be like
an invasion,
like an invasion or a parasite that sucks what it can and then goes back, you know, goes to find another host. And that's not good for us. We need to have immigration that's based on the idea that you come and you become an American and you have loyalty to this country. And if they can't do that, then we need to have change our immigration laws, because assimilation is mandatory. If it does, history shows us, if culture, disparate cultures come together into the same regional geography and they don't assimilate together, then what you have is friction. And we're seeing this all across Western Europe, as in massive numbers of immigrants coming from the Middle East and North Africa are coming up, but they're not trying to assimilate into Western European culture. They're trying to remain separate and apart and have their own society. And then be, as their numbers increase, gradually they gain more political power and they can start to influence the local culture and change the local culture from within and gradually erase it. And we see that in London, which now everybody around the world is calling it Londonistan, because it's just so predominantly Muslim now. The number one name for babies in London is Mohammed.
Jeez.
The mayor is Muslim. And I'm not criticizing Muslims, but it's an example of how we don't have – they're not melding together into one society. They've got different societies, different cultures that are not mixing, not integrating, and it's creating huge, huge problems. And that's what's happening in America.
So Western – society is under attack.
Oh yeah, yeah. And honestly, from I've done a lot of research on immigration trends, birth rates, and Western Europe it's beyond the point of no return. Statistically, when the birth rate falls below 1.6% or 1.6 children per couple, once it falls below that, based on the birth rate and the trend, when you couple that with the birth rate of the immigrants coming in, and which is much, much higher, usually above three children on average per couple, then what these studies have done, and these are studies by the United Nations and others that have published this, it shows that by the year 2050, there's not going to be a... I don't want to say white, but a traditional European majority left in any of the major nations over there in Europe. The UK is, by 2050, is gone. Germany is not going to last that long. I think they're saying by 2030, Germany will be predominantly Muslim. France is, I think they're giving it by 2030 before the majority is Muslim. And here in the United States, our birth rate right now is at 1.6. If our birth rate drops any more than it is now, then it is a statistical inevitability that we will lose the traditional European American culture to other cultures. And the only way to keep it propped up is if we can successfully get the Mexican immigration, the Mexican immigrants, if we count them as part of the white population, then the majority can hold out till till 2050. But other than that, it doesn't look good. Because immigration policy has become so politicized, and there's so much political correctness, it's become an evil thing to value retaining your own heritage and your own culture. You get lumped in with the white supremacists if you talk about wanting to preserve traditional European culture.
Well, it's even, in my opinion anyway, it's even worse than that. I mean, you make very, very good points, very valid points all the way down the line, but it's worse than that because it'll turn the United States into the third world nation.
Yeah.
I mean, there'll be nothing but, there'll be, you know, we'll have, well, we already do, millions and millions and millions of poor people that aren't even, it's just staggering. There's a lot of problems right now.
Yeah, you don't have to look any further than Los Angeles and other cities in California to see what's coming for the rest of the country. It's apocalyptic.
It is apocalyptic. That is a good word. That's the word I wanted to find. So we escaped Hillary, but we've got probably a globalist in office. Now, a lot of my research has led me to believe that the globalists want a third world war. Have you looked into that yet?
Yeah, they definitely want a third world war. And a world war is going to be necessary to cover up the economic collapse that is looming. Mm-hmm. The amount of debt that we have is staggering, and there's no way around it. At this point, Mark, if you collect all of the income tax that Americans will pay this year, take every penny of it, not one penny of the income tax that is collected is going to go toward our military. It's not going to go toward any of our entitlement programs and none of the welfare programs, not toward infrastructure, not one penny. Every single bit of our income tax that is collected is going to go toward the interest payment on our debt. That's it. It's no different from a person who has so much credit card debt that all they can pay is their minimum payment, and they can barely pay that. But if the interest rate goes up at all, or if the debt increases and that minimum payment goes up, they won't even be able to pay that. And if that happens, you're done. And that's where we're at. There's nothing that can be done to recover from the amount of debt we have. And so what we see is that they are just expanding the debt, because that's what we have. Our whole fiat currency system is based on the expansion of debt. If you don't continue to expand the debt, then new dollars aren't created. That's how they create dollars, is when someone borrows money. But we've gotten so deep into it now that we have no hope of ever being able to pay it off. We talk about, oh, well, we're burdening our grandchildren with debt. That's true in a way, but it's never going to make it that far. We don't have to wait to see our grandchildren grow up to be taxpaying adults to see what's going to happen. This thing's going to pop sometime soon. And when that does, everything's going to change. Everything as we know it, we're going to be reduced to a second world nation. It'll be unlike anything we've ever experienced. The Great Depression is going to look pretty good compared to what's going to happen. There will be massive changes geopolitically as the United States empire. It's going to be just like the implosion of Great Britain. They were such a world power. And then in just a relatively short period of time, they lost that. We're going to go much faster than that. It's not like the end of the world. We'll still continue to function. We'll still pay our taxes. We'll still do things, but we're going to be more like, England, Great Britain.
Do you see World War III after the collapse?
I one or the other. I've been talking about it for a handful of years now. I thought that we would have had this collapse by now. 2014, I thought, was going to be when it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. When they stopped or talked about stopping the the Federal Reserve pumping out more and more mm-hmm. money at 0% interest. But now what's happening is that we have the Federal Reserve is starting to gradually raise rates, and that's going to lead us into recession. And you combine that with other actions that Trump is taking, for example, the tariff war that he's getting into with China. When you add all of these things together, they guarantee a recession at the very least. And just a handful of weeks ago, we saw a huge drop in the stock market, and it was a scare. And we're having these more frequently. And when you look at charts and compare it to what we saw leading up to the Great Depression before the big market crash in 29, you see very similar things. You've got this skyrocketing rate that goes up, makes no sense, nothing to undergird it to justify the rapid rise, the rapid inflation and the value of the stocks. But then you see great big drops followed by great big spikes back and forth, showing that investors don't know what's going on, and that's what's happening now. We're seeing these hiccups happen before there's going to be a crash. As far as whether or not the world war comes before or after, I don't know. I've got my guesses as much as anybody else would. Mm-hmm. But what we do see is that Donald Trump is pushing hard toward war with Iran. People don't see it as that, but that's what this is. Donald Trump is preparing for war with Iran. That's where we're going. Israel will kick it off. And they're out there antagonizing Iran right now. I'm very interested to see whether or not Donald Trump listens to what everybody else is saying about this Iran deal. If he backs out of this Iran deal, it's going to be bad news. And the fact that he brought in Bolton, who absolutely hates Iran and is a big time Israeli supporter, and that he's trying to get Pompeo in as the new Secretary of State. These are both of those men, Bolton and Pompeo, both are rabidly anti-Iran, and Trump is preparing. He's getting his war cabinet set up for a war with Iran. The problem is that Russia will not put up with it. Russia has to maintain Iran in order to, if Iran falls, if we do to Iran what we did to Iraq, Russia is isolated. They've got nothing left in that part of the world. And they're not going to let it fall because they know they're next. So they have to take a stand. This is a red line for Russia.
Who was the leader? Wesley Clark, the general that got the information that showed the seven countries that they wanted to regime change in 5 years. Are we just seeing this played out?
Yeah, it took a little while longer. And in fact, it's funny you should bring that up. I've got right here on my desk a copy of his book. It's called A Time to Lead. And in the book, he recounts how after 9/11, just a handful of weeks afterward, he went into the Pentagon and found out that Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld had this big plan to knock off all these nations. And we were going to hit them fast. The goal was to have these seven nations knocked off within 5 years, but Iraq became such a debacle. They had to slow it down because clearly we couldn't fight all these wars with as mired down as we had gotten there in Iraq. But right now we are in most of those countries. We've already taken control of Afghanistan. We took control of Iraq. We are currently fighting in Syria, trying to knock them off. One of them was Libya. We knocked off Libya. And then Sudan was one of them, and we're in Sudan right now. CIA is conducting a lot of drone strikes in Sudan. They're supporting al-Shabaab, which is basically the al-Qaeda in Somalia. And so it's not that they're not carrying these plans out. It's just that we don't hear about them because the mainstream media is complicit and they don't tell us what's going on. Right. You have to go to outside sources, news outlets. I spend the vast majority of my time reading news from around the world outside of the United States. I have to do a whole lot of using Google Translate because I like to go to the countries to their local papers and read what they're saying. But I can't read their languages. But you put it on Google Translate and you get a rough translation.
Rough.
And that's far more accurate than what you'll get from CNN or, you know, MSNBC or something.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's crazy. And I guess this whole demonization of Russia is part of the lead into World War III, too.
Yeah, yeah. Russia is Russian TV came out. Their biggest channel in Russia is called Channel One. And they sent a film crew out to my house Friday.
Really?
And yeah, I'm a nobody here in the United States, but
Russia Today came to
not Russia Today. Russia Today is big, but they're not one of the biggest ones in Russia.
Oh, okay.
This is called Channel One. It would be like the CNN of Russia. It's
no
their
kidding.
Biggest network there. Yeah, I've spoken with Russia Today. I've got two or three different Russian news networks that interview me for segments. But anyway, they had come out, and the main thing they wanted to talk about was Syria and essentially the propaganda against Syria here in America and how what the perception of the whole Syrian thing is from an American perspective. And we talked a lot about how the average American, if they're only getting their news from the major networks, they have no idea what's going on over
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, a lot of people on channels on like YouTube who are accessing information other than CNN, they've got a better idea. But still, in general, most Americans just don't know the extent that our government is carrying out war and military operations and drone strikes in other countries. It's insane.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. Gosh, it's hard to believe that we've gone this far. I mean, I can't believe. Well, I'm glad for you that you're getting this notoriety, but isn't it when I try to think of what the I have no idea what the average person thinks anymore. I couldn't even begin to tell you.
Yeah, I get a lot of feedback from people on YouTube. Excuse me. And it's diverse, but most people that go to alternative news know a whole lot more than people that are getting their info. I'm choking on my tea.
Oh, really?
I was drinking herbal tea and it went down my windpipe.
Oh,
but they know a whole lot more. And I think that's good because when I first started doing this reporting back in 2013 on what was going on in the Middle East and mm-hmm. the role that the United States was playing, 75%, two-thirds of the people would say, Jake, you're an idiot. You have no idea what you're talking about. The United States isn't supporting rebels in Syria. That would be treasonous. Of course, we're not supporting ISIS or anything. Well, now most people that are informed on it at all, they know, okay, yeah, we are doing that.
Wow.
Don't know why, but yeah, I acknowledge that that's happening. So people are coming around, and that's one of the major reasons that there is such a heavy crackdown on independent voices on YouTube and Google.
Right.
Massive, massive, massive censorship because they don't like for there to be competition with the narrative that's being spun by CNN. And if we go back to really when a lot of this started, when it got really bad, was at the outset of the Iraq war. I remember back then after 9/11, previously back during the Vietnam War, the coverage was terrible. You always saw the caskets of soldiers coming home. You heard horrible stories, and the public largely was against the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
So to handle it differently, when they were getting ready to launch this series of wars, the War on Terror, mm-hmm. what they did was they took the mainstream media and they decided to embed them with the actual troops. And so CNN and Fox News and everybody, they could have their reporters right there inside some of these units going around fighting.
I remember that.
With the understanding that they, you know, kept the story a certain way. But also just being there you know, rubbing elbows with the troops there is going to skew the reporting some. When you're buddies with the troops,
yeah,
you're not going to really call them out on make them look bad. It's unpatriotic, and so that's one of the ways that we just don't get real news anymore. Is the CIA largely Operation Mockingbird has figured out how to really control the narrative through the media. And Americans, if we only consume our information from those limited sources, we're only going to get one slice of the picture. We have to be much more diverse in the kinds of news sources that we get it from. I'm not saying that there's any particular source out there that's better than CNN, but you have to have an aggregate. You have to be willing to look at different sides of the story, and that's something that Americans have really gotten to where they don't do very well, is listening to other opinions that conflict with their own.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Don't like to do that.
I hear you.
So,
you know, your YouTube channel is Blackstone Intelligence Network, and you've got like 145,000 subscribers, so you're getting your word out, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been nice. I was getting about 2 million views a month. They deleted my channel.
They did.
About a month and a half ago. Yeah.
How long ago?
About a month and a half ago. I got it restored. But in the process, it deleted my archive of over 1,000 videos.
Oh no.
Yeah, do you have
them anywhere else, like on your computer or something, or?
Yeah, I kept them there. The problem is there's just so many of them that to re-upload them all, especially when a lot of it is dated news related to the news of the day. So what I'm doing is I'm building up an archive on my own website, which is blackstoneintel.com. And I'm working on uploading some of the videos there so people can have access to it. But on YouTube, my YouTube channel is youtube.com/prepare333, and that's where most of my videos get posted.
But what about your Blackstone Intelligence Network? Is that a different site?
Well, that's just a YouTube address that goes to the Blackstone. The Blackstone channel. Yeah, my website is the blackstoneintel.com, and I post video. Ever since YouTube deleted me, I no longer rely on YouTube for hosting exclusively, so I post to multiple channels now.
Good.
Or DTube and BitChute and other places, but I use my website blackstoneintel.com as the single source where you can access all of it without having to go around to all the different sites to find my stuff.
Jake, great work. Thanks, man. I won't keep you any later. I always enjoy talking to you. Have a good evening, sir.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark. Take care.
Bye-bye.